Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Wynn, joined by the whole team here, Abigail Wall, Simon Schuster, Jacob Kanzler, and John Rurink. A little later, we're going to play a snippet of our interview, our year-end interview with Governor Rick Snyder. But first, it is our year-end edition in which we nominate and then name our Senator and Democrat of the Year. And next week, we're going to do House Member of the Year, and we'll do Political Figure of the Year. And for our listeners' benefit, this is our opportunity to recognize those folks who are in the legislature, and this year expanding it to political figures in the state, who have shown an ability to get things done. They have been effective, have shown a level of activity, and a level of impact that's kind of risen above their colleagues. Since there's really no other avenue to for these folks to be recognized for the hard work that they did in a given year, for the past several years, we have recognized these people in the podcast. We nominate these people not in a bubble. I've spoken with many individuals on both sides of the aisle over the last several days to collect names, get arguments, and get their input on who should be nominated. So this is something we take very seriously, and we hope you appreciate the work that we put into this. And with that, we're going to start our discussion with our Senator of the Year for the year 2016. John, who are you going to put on the table here?
I am going to put on the table the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Rick Jones. He's been nominated before, but he struck me as the other day, he was introducing his chief of staff who was leaving, and he noted that the Judiciary Committee pumped out something like 200 bills. And it got me to thinking. I started looking over the record, and there's been a lot of different stuff. He's done a lot of stuff for special needs children. There was a recent package that allowed their parents to put their identities on the law enforcement system. So if they wandered off or got lost, or they could be identified. There was some bills where he banned rehoming or the selling of a child. There's just been an enormous amount of stuff, medical marijuana, just a whole list of stuff that's happened this year that he's kind of been a factor in.
Medical marijuana, now that's something that had installed for several years, several cycles. He actually made sure that got to the governor's office, recognized the need, really did a 180 on that particular bill. And I've always admired about Rick Jones is that a populist kind of a politician, he is very good at sticking his finger up, seeing which way his district is going, which way momentum is going, and going full charge in that direction.
Yeah, and another thing to think about with the medical marijuana package is it really put together a whole regulatory structure that will need to be there if we ever do get legalized recreational marijuana too. So, I mean, it's a kind of a far-reaching thing that was accomplished there.
And Jacob, you had mentioned something else that Jones had done that I'd completely forgotten about.
Yeah, he introduced a bill to kind of deregulate the dental scanners. I think it's a way to get dental activity with less pain, if I remember correctly. And by introducing that bill, the Certificate of Need Commission agreed to deregulate it, and so he took credit for that. So just things like that, being active in multiple realms of policy makes Senator Jones a very busy guy.
And maybe more importantly, Simon, he saved Christmas again.
Yes, he did.
With his nativity scene. So with that, we'll put the name of Rick Jones on the table. All right, our next nominee for Senator of the Year is going to be the chair of the Senate Energy and Technology Committee. That's Mike Nofs. And John, just remembering the process of going through these bills, this energy reform legislation that capped off our lame duck session, the deliberative process that is involved in crafting this bill just really cannot be overstated.
Oh, no, it can't be overstated. I mean, he spent enormous amounts of hours working with the business community, working with the utilities, and trying to get to a point where something could be passed. I remember, I think it was going into the summer, we were talking about this. He was working with the chamber to get them on board, got them on board. He's just did yeoman's work in the Senate, get that package out of the Senate.
And once the package did get out of the Senate, staying in touch with the bills and working with the governor's office on what ended up being the final project. I think it's also worth mentioning, too, that he has maintained really kind of a moderate voting record and kind of a common sense voting record while in the Senate this past year, was involved in responding to this Kalamazoo shooting in regards to the Uber driver and putting in legislation on an alert system so that the law enforcement community can alert people in times of crisis more quickly if something like that's going on, if you have somebody who's going on a rampage or something like that, that folks in the immediate area can be notified. And obviously, there were others who worked on that as well, Brian Iden, Margaret O'Brien. Noss was involved in that. And Jacob, you had mentioned mention something else that Noss was involved in I completely forgot about.
Yeah, digging through the archives. He chaired the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, Appropriations Committee, and they I guess in kind of a response to the critical audit of the Grand Rapids Veterans Home, they included raises for the nursing assistants there.
And he had said during that testimony, he questioned the rate of pay that these certified nursing assistants had gotten. And obviously, that certified nursing assistant issue was very much contributed to that critical audit in the Grand Rapids Veterans Home. And so this was in response to that, try and get that kind of right size. That's a package that I think we're going to be mentioning, if not later in this particular podcast, in next week's podcast as well. Now, for our next nominee, John, we're going to do something I don't think we've ever done on this podcast, and certainly not in the time that we have named senators or House members of the year, and that is nominate somebody from the minority party for one of these positions. But this year, we're going to do that. Jim Ananick, the Senate minority leader, I want to nominate for Senator of the Year. I think it's hard to argue that Flint was the most significant story that happened in our state. Just on the calendar year, clearly the instances of the lead pipe and the poisoning of the water in Flint happened prior to 2016. But the media blow up on this consumed our newsroom and newsrooms across the state for 3 months. And really the legislative voice on this all along has been Jim Ananick. And it's not been necessarily a shrill attack voice, even though he has been extremely critical where he's needed to be critical. But he's also been very effective in working with the Senate and working with legislators and working with the governor's office and trying to push forward as much as humanly possible practical ideas and things that can be done. He pushed for the task force. He pushed for a report. When the report wasn't coming out, he pushed to get that thing introduced. And now he's pushing to get some of the task force recommendations out. So you take a look at the work that he did this past year, John, and it's hard to argue that he doesn't deserve to be in the picture here as we're talking about Senator of the Year.
Oh, I think he absolutely does. And you got to look even beyond the work he did on the actual Flint issue. You got to look to the dollar side. He spent some of his own funds buying filters in terms of his, I believe it was his 527, or was it his PAC leadership, one of his funds. But he also is a huge fundraiser for the Senate Democrats. He's raised more money for that caucus than any of the prior leaders going back. I think the article he did was back to 2001. So he's been very effective.
And probably maybe even more than that. I mean, that was just as far as we tracked.
Just this cycle, $80,000 he raised for his caucus. So
let's also not diminish the fact that he had a caucus of 10, sometimes in cases 11 members, but really effectively 10 members this whole year, and was still able to make it an effective caucus in which they worked with the Republicans in some cases, and maybe more than years past, and actually got to influence legislation in some cases. I'm thinking of the energy package, for instance, but that's not the only time when he was able to round up his caucus and was able to make an impact.
It's true, and you know, a lot of times when you look at the relationship between a majority leader and a minority leader, they're very acrimonious. You talk to Arlen Meekoff about Jim Ananick, and he has nothing but good things to say about him. He's always willing to sit down and exchange ideas, even when they don't agree. So there's that bipartisan work that he does that's very important.
Well, for that reason, our nominee here is going to be Jim Ananick. All right, Jacob, who's our next nominee?
Senator Jeff Hansen. Earlier in the year, it feels like forever ago, but one of the main architects behind what eventually became the Detroit Public Schools rescue package, there seemed to be some kind of political symbolism significance to a lawmaker from outstate being a chief voice and a chief advocate for rescuing the Detroit Public Schools. The entirety of what he was pushing and the governor was pushing did not make it through, notably the Education Commission. But obviously, the House took a lot of the elements from the original plan. So Senator Hansen played a big role in what eventually became law.
John, even though some of what he put on the table didn't get into the final package, what Senator Hansen did was he put a keen focus on the need to rescue the Detroit Public School District and make sure that it didn't fall into bankruptcy. He put it in the forefront on the Senate, really kind of set the tone and made it not about an if, but a when. Mm-hmm. And even though we didn't get the commission that he wanted involved in this, he did make it a priority. And really, as an institution, said, you know, the legislature, we have an obligation as a legislature to do right for the city of Detroit. So let's do something with it, and let's move forward.
That, and just the way he conducts himself, he's kind of the example of what you would want in your state senator. He's willing to address statewide problems. He's not parochial in terms of just focusing on his district. He's not a showboater. He's a kind of get-to-work kind of guy and just gets behind the issues and works on them.
And not only that, during the Detroit public school debate, he was also the chair of the K-12 budget and was able to push that through, get really hard multitask here in the middle of the year, in the spring, in the early summer for Jeff Hansen. So for that reason, we're going to also nominate Jeff Hansen for Senator of the Year. Our final nomination for Senator of the Year, I'm going to nominate Senate Appropriations Committee Chair Dave Hildebrand. Dave Hildebrand has, I think, done an extremely good job as being appropriations chair, having no experience whatsoever with the post upon taking it. He's done a good job balancing the budgets year after year and has been a very steady influence, I think, behind the scenes as far as getting through top funding items. I think the top funding item this year was making sure that we had emergency money going to Flint, and he made sure that that was done not only in the regular budget, but in this last appropriations, in the last supplemental that was passed, the Senate Bill 800, making sure that Flint has been taken care of, but at the same time, just not throwing money at the problem, making sure there's accountability behind the money that's put in there, and that the legislators are being apprised of what's going on and making sure that there's no waste in the system. So for that reason, I'm going to go ahead and put Dave Hildebrand's name up for consideration as well. All right, so for the winner of our Senator of the Year, I got to say, we've been doing this for several years now at MERS, and our debate on this was an extremely spirited one, and we had some very good arguments off tape here that we're not going to go into, because actually it would take the entire podcast to listen to our debate, but it was a very good debate, because I think you can make a very compelling case for Senator Rick Jones, for Senator Jim Ananick, for Mike Knopf's. Very compelling cases. The type of year that they had is just extremely noteworthy. At the end, though, we are going to name Senator Mike Knopf's our Senator of the Year. And let me explain why. To get the energy package, to get all the various factions that were involved in this, and we're talking dozens of groups and individuals and entities on various sides of a multi-pronged issue, to get them together and get this energy legislation, I would say 75% of the way there, I think is extremely commendable. He took a piece of legislation that had hit a brick wall in the House, and in 2016 got it into a position where the governor was able to make that last fine tune that got everybody on board. I think that that's an extremely commendable accomplishment, and for him and for his staff, for the hours and hours that they waded through a very, very non-sexy issue, but an extremely important issue for the state. The main things that we need as a civilization to actually live in the type of way we live is extremely commendable. So for that reason, congratulations to the Senator Mike Knopf's on the year 2016. You are our Senator of the Year. All right, we're going to move on now to the Democrat of the Year. And the reason we separate Democrat out is because they are in the minority in both the House and the Senate. And so what they are able to accomplish is a little bit of a different standard than if you are in the majority. Obviously, if you're in the majority, you are in a strong position to make policy and make things happen. And what you are able to do is different than if you are in the minority. It just so happens the Democrats are in the minority in the House and the Senate again this year. So there's a separate category for them. So our nominees for Democrat of the Year, and we're going to start with one of our nominees for Senator of the Year, is Jim Ananick. And I don't want to restate everything that we had said earlier, but what he has been able to do, I just want to punctuate, is just been very admirable and very trying and personally troubling a situation. To be a resident of Flint and to have family and friends there, to see them being put in the position of hauling water to their house and potentially being poisoned, is really got to be very traumatic. And the way he's approached things as far as getting policy through in a confrontational but a very complimentary way as far as working with legislators. Senator Arlen Meekhoff, the Senate Majority Leader, has complimented him many times before on his ability to work and get things done. And that's really what we're looking for again for our Democrat and Senators and House Members of the Year. Level of activity, impact, and effectiveness. And I think that it's very fair to say Jim Ananick checks all three of those boxes. The next nominee for Democrat of the Year, I'm going to put on the table Senator Steve Bita. To see this significant piece of legislation that he worked with Senator Rick Jones on, as far as giving compensation for people who are wrongfully imprisoned, I think is a very commendable accomplishment. This is something he's been working on for several years, and would kind of seem like a little bit of a no-brainer, but when you're working from the position of the minority and advocating for people who have been in prison, it's really hard to kind of make that in the forefront of people's minds. And after years of deliberative working with people, getting the Senate Judiciary Chair on board, he was able finally to get a bill to the governor's office that got overwhelming support in the Senate and in the House, and really something that is a bit long overdue. He was able to put the rights of people wrongfully imprisoned in the forefront of the legislature and get something accomplished. So congratulations to Senator Steve Bita on that. For that reason, we're going to put a nomination for him for Democrat of the Year. Abby, your nomination that you're going to put forward.
I'd like to put forward Representative Adam Zemke, mostly for his how active he's been on education issues across committees. First of all, he was as Minority Vice Chair on Education. He was very involved in getting third grade reading bills passed and off the ground. He was a part of the zero tolerance suspension bills that passed and are on the governor's desk. And while he was on Appropriations Committee, he had a pretty good working relationship, very good relationship with Chairman Al Pasholka and getting some ideas on the table for how to resolve that issue. And that was a really tough fight for Democrats who sat on the committee. He also joined in on other issues where he has some expertise, like autonomous vehicles. And I want to point out that he did all of this while having Chairman of the House Democratic Fund on his plate in an election year. So
Adam Zemke had a very busy 2016, and certainly as far as level of activity, extremely high. I don't know if anybody in the House Democratic side can compare on that. So we'll go ahead. Yeah, Adam Zemke, one of our nominees for Democrat of the Year. Jacob, go ahead with your nominee for Democrat of the Year.
I'm going to nominate Representative Frank Liberati. And the reason I do that, usually when we talk about Democrat of the Year and minority party, you know, they don't get a lot of legislation through. Representative Liberati is a major partner on the seclusion restraint bills, which, you know, has Callie's name tied to it. But he's been a big part of the package. He's been an advocate for special education because of his son. And he was floated briefly as a possible leader for the Dems after Grimal said he was departed. So pretty good for a relatively new House member in the minority party.
Franco Liberati, a nominee for Democrat of the Year. Abby, our final nominee for Democrat of the Year is the minority leader over in the House, of minority floor leader, Sam Singh. And for several reasons, I think at the end of the year, Sam Singh has kind of distinguished himself as being the next leader of the caucus, obviously had the faith of his Democratic colleagues to be named the leader, with Tim Grimal deciding not to run for another time. Was able to do it on the first ballot and showed right off the bat that he's someone that is willing to work with Tom Leonard and Republicans by getting some key Democratic priorities in this energy legislation as it relates to net metering, while also not giving up on the renewable portfolio standards. You take a look at what the Democrats had asked for when it comes to the energy legislation, and by and large, I mean, nobody got 100% of what they wanted on that, but the Democrats got a good chunk of it, and I think that's a testament to Sam Singh's leadership and ability to work on both sides.
Yes, I think that it's without a doubt Singh has had some victories long before he was even on the table as a replacement for Grimal. You know, you see him on the floor very actively working with folks across the aisle, good relationship with his caucus, of course. Aside from energy, there have been some other issues that Singh has taken the lead on. He was another one of these very active voices on DPS. And then another thing I want to point out, too, is he was able to get a bill passed that expands the amnesty granted for people who call 911 in the case of a drug overdose. And that was a big bipartisan victory with Representative Pasholka. Not a controversial bill, but I think he's got an eye for critical policy that can't go unnoticed.
For that reason, we'll nominate Sam Singh for our Democrat of the Year. All right, so we've had another discussion here, and I just appreciate all the work that you guys have done, Jacob and Simon and Abigail and John, looking at all these folks' background, what they did this year, and analyzing and really kind of discussing and hashing out all the different reasons why somebody would be named a Democrat of the Year. But after talking with everybody and having this discussion again, we are going to once again name Jim Ananick our Democrat of the Year. I think that this is probably going to be about the third time in a row we're going to nominate him with this honor. But considering the kind of year that he had and the hardships that that came with Flint, and the way that he has kept Flint in the mindset of the chamber, of the Senate and the House, even if it's not on the national headlines anymore, Flint is still very much in the forefront of everybody's mind in the legislature, and a lot of that has to do with him. He was able to get the Flint Promise Zone legislation out of the Senate. He was able to get Sheldon Neely's bill in regards to notification of a violation of the lead and copper rule out of the Senate as well. He's been pushing Jim Stamas to try and get some more legislation out of that task force report done. He was the person who called for the task force initially, got the Senate Majority Leader to go along with even having a task force in the first place. So for all these reasons, I mean, his effectiveness in dealing with just a catastrophic issue, we're going to once again give this award to Jim Ananick as our Democrat of the Year. Maybe we should rename the award the Jim Ananick Democrat of the Year Award the way this is going. But congratulations again, Senator Ananick, on this award. Let's start with this one.
You're organized.
What's the most colorful adjective you would use to describe the health of the state's general fund going forward?
Colorful adjective. That's not my strong suit.
I know. We're challenging you here early.
I'm good.
You don't have concerns about the general
fund?
Oh,
I always have concerns. That was part of the issue about the balance between the funds. But generally, we've done good stuff. I mean, the strength of our economy.
As you know, a lot of the state's revenue streams are restricted by statute.
Yeah, well.
From a management perspective, have you thought much or looked at much whether or not some of those can be loosened up as far as flexibility, other than what you talked about earlier?
I always try to look at those. And one of the challenges is usually you find special interest groups particularly interested in continuing to have their sort of stream. And so I respect that, but I also want to make sure we're asking the question, do you really need all those resources? Are they being measured in the appropriate fashion to see there's a return?
And the reason why we're asking this is because just taking a look at the long term, it seems like there's going to be a lot of pressures put on the general fund, right? With transportation, Healthy Michigan. And so that's why we're asking the questions. I mean, is there going to come a time here where we're going to have to raise taxes to help out the general fund?
I don't think you'd necessarily have to raise taxes. There are, again, this is where you get questions about what's the right balance. If you look at variables, is this question about earmarking revenue streams and doing different things? The other one you get almost every year is what's the balance between where higher ed and the community colleges are between the two funds? Mm-hmm. Because we've had it so they can shift back and forth. So they're sort of one of the buffers between it. So what I'd say is the goal is, when you look at like the school aid fund potentially could rise to having very large balances beyond what you'd normally appropriate. So the question is, how do you get more flexibility between those funds or with other funds that could be growing? And that's a question we just have to do on an ongoing basis. What I tried to do earlier, last week or so, was to say, longer term, this could be an issue, not just because there could be some pressure during the period of transportation, but even longer term. If you just look at forecast of how one could grow, because they come from different sources. In a perfect world, if you had the same sources for all the funds, you wouldn't have this, but you have more sales tax oriented for school aid, you have more income tax oriented for income tax, you have this bizarre kind of feature that all the refunds come out of the general fund. That doesn't make common sense. So those are some of the things I'm trying to clean up. Kyle, in particular, to say they may not have been big issues while I'm doing this, but if I can sort of look at some structural things and clean them up and make them better for future governors or future legislators, I'd rather do it rather than leave it for them to wait till it becomes an issue. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I'm just surprised that you're not at all panicked or concerned about the general fund with all these pressures coming.
I try not to panic about most things. In terms of concerns, yeah, I have some concerns, but again, we've done great budgeting practices and we've done it in a thoughtful way. And I don't necessarily see the big issue being in the next couple of years.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of the MERS Monday podcast. Again, we'd like to thank the whole team here for the hard work that we put into this nomination and awarding of our recognitions at the end of the year. Next week, make sure you tune in. We are going to be naming our House Member of the Year and a new category, Politician of the Year. This is in recognition of the fact that this is an even number year where there was actual statewide races that we all had to consider. Usually on odd number years, we do our Freshman of the Year. The Freshman of the Year will return in 2017 when they are truly freshmen. So that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Thanks to John, Abigail, Simon, and Jacob. I'm Kyle Malin. Until then, take care.